The doorbell rings, sending a flutter of anticipation through my body. But the man at the door isn't delivering a package or selling something. He's about to shatter my entire world. "Do you have a daughter born at St. Mary's Hospital in Clapham 15 years ago?" he asks. I confirm Catherine's birthday before realizing I shouldn't share such information with a stranger. His expression shifts from awkward to panicked as he requests to come inside. "This isn't doorstep conversation," he says gravely. So begins Adele Park's gripping psychological thriller, The Stranger in My Home, a Sunday Times bestseller that explores the devastating aftermath of a hospital baby swap discovered 15 years too late. Parks, who has sold over 4 million books translated into 31 languages, masterfully examines what makes a parent, biology or love, while exploring themes of identity, betrayal, and maternal instinct. Praised by The Guardian as unputdownable and championed by celebrities like Jojo Moyes and Richard Osman, this novel forces readers to confront an unthinkable question. What would you do if the child you raised wasn't yours? Allison's life appears flawless on the surface. She lives in an affluent neighborhood with her successful novelist husband Jeff and their 15-year-old daughter Catherine, a lacrosse star with exceptional academic promise. Their comfortable existence revolves around Catherine, school drop-offs, sports matches, and quiet evenings of domestic bliss. Allison treasures these moments, particularly when Catherine makes space for her on the bed during their nighttime chats. "It seems only yesterday I was reading bedtime stories to her infant body curled against mine," she reflects, already fearing the day her daughter will outgrow these intimate moments. But beneath this picture-perfect facade lies Allison's constant anxiety. She repeatedly tells herself how lucky and safe she is, as though saying it often enough will keep it true. Her transformation from a bullshit council estate scouse teen rebel into a timid, self-censoring epitome of home county's respectability happened gradually, but she knows it was complete by the time Catherine started school, when she really understood what I had to lose. This carefully constructed life crumbles when Tom Trubby arrives at her door with impossible news. Their daughters were switched at birth. His wife recently died of cancer caused by a harmful BRCA gene mutation, prompting their daughter Olivia to secretly get genetic testing. The results revealed something shocking. Olivia isn't biologically related to either of her parents. "I think you have my baby," Tom tells them. "I think there was a mix-up at the hospital." The revelation sends Allison into a spiral of denial and fury. She pushes Tom out of their home, but the seed of doubt has been planted. Jeff admits the swap might be possible, while Allison storms upstairs, rejecting the possibility entirely. Yet when Tom closed his eyes during their confrontation, she noticed his spectacular eyelashes, and when he opened them again, she saw Catherine in his eyes, an unwelcome confirmation she can't ignore. Allison's resistance to accepting the baby swap stems from her own traumatic childhood, a past marked by abandonment and survival against overwhelming odds. At 8 years old, her mother delivered the crushing blow that would define her life. She was leaving, taking Allison's three younger brothers, but leaving her behind. This profound rejection occurred on a rain-soaked Tuesday morning, with her mother's parting words being a cold, "You'll manage." The memory of watching them drive away in their battered Ford Escort would haunt her dreams for decades to come. This early abandonment forced Allison to become remarkably self-sufficient. She developed an intricate system of survival strategies, washing her single school shirt nightly in the bathroom sink, carefully rationing food to last between her father's sporadic shopping trips, and mastering the art of avoiding questions about her home life from well-meaning teachers. She learned to forge her father's signature on school documents and became adept at creating excuses for missed parent-teacher meetings. A pivotal moment came during her daily refuge in the school library, where Mrs. Henderson, the librarian, noticed the quiet girl who spent every lunch break among the books. She introduced Allison to Benjamin Franklin's writings, particularly his quote, "By failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail." This became more than just a mantra. It transformed into Allison's shield against life's uncertainties. She developed elaborate study systems, creating color-coded timetables and meticulously detailed notes. Her academic success began to hint at possibilities previously unimaginable. University beckoned, though even thinking about it felt like tempting fate. The pregnancy at 16 hit like a thunderbolt during a crucial mathematics exam. As she stared at trigonometry problems, the realization of missed periods and morning sickness crystallized into certainty. Her dreams of university and a law career, carefully constructed over years of straight A's and perfect attendance, crumbled. The voice in her head, eerily similar to her mother's, reminded her that girls like her didn't escape their circumstances. They didn't become lawyers or university graduates. They became statistics. Her mother's reappearance during this crisis proved devastating. With characteristic cruelty, she labeled Allison a silly little slut and took control of the situation with iron-fisted authority. The prohibition against telling her boyfriend, a kind boy named Mark who wrote her poetry, left Allison completely isolated. At 4.5 months in a cold doctor's office, her mother orchestrated the adoption plan with brutal efficiency, brushing aside Allison's quiet tears as mere teenage dramatics. This history of abandonment and forced surrender explains Allison's fierce attachment to Catherine. Having lost one child to adoption, a daughter whose face she never saw, she cannot contemplate losing another. The baby swap threatens not just her relationship with Catherine, but her entire identity as a mother, the one role where she finally felt competent and needed. Her desperate grip on Catherine isn't just about love. It's about breaking a cycle of loss that has defined her entire existence. The DNA test confirms Tom's claim. Catherine is biologically his daughter, and Olivia, the girl he raised, is Allison and Jeff's biological child. They face the impossible task of telling Catherine she isn't their biological daughter. When they finally reveal the truth, Catherine is devastated, swearing for the first time in her life, "You are fucking kidding, right?" Her initial fury gives way to practical concerns when they explain the possible genetic cancer risk. Catherine asks detailed questions about BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutations, the testing process, and her cancer risk. Allison explains the 50% chance of inheriting the mutation and the associated cancer risks, while inwardly picturing her daughter suffering through chemotherapy. Beyond the medical concerns looms another problem. The Trubbies want a relationship with Catherine. Tom has called multiple times already and isn't going away. As Jeff reminds Allison, only alligators get to care for their young by holding them in their mouths. Catherine isn't a little girl anymore, and they can't shield her from this reality forever. The situation grows more complex as Catherine begins secretly visiting the Trubby home. When Allison discovers these clandestine visits, she feels betrayed, but follows Jeff's advice to pretend they support the meetings. During an awkward dinner with the Trubbies, Catherine and Olivia, who looks remarkably like Allison with her peroxide blonde hair and multiple piercings, size each other up. The girls are biological strangers to the parents who raised them, yet bound by blood to people they've just met. This biological connection manifests in unexpected ways. When Tom visits their home, Allison notices he has elegant fingers like Catherine's, probably explaining her musical talent that she'd attributed to Jeff's mother. "She looks a lot like my other two," Tom says excitedly, before catching himself. These physical similarities are undeniable, forcing Allison to confront the reality that Catherine shares genetic traits with the Trubbies that she and Jeff could never have given her. As Catherine grows closer to her biological family, her relationship with Allison deteriorates with increasing speed and intensity. Their shopping trip, once a cherished mother-daughter ritual, becomes a painful illustration of their growing estrangement. Catherine gravitates toward tight jeans and a revealing crop top that mirrors Olivia's bold style choices, deliberately rejecting Allison's more conservative suggestions. The clothing becomes more than fabric. It represents Catherine's conscious shift away from the values and preferences that once connected her to her adoptive mother. During their strained lunch, Catherine animatedly describes an ice hockey match with the Trubbies, her eyes lighting up as she recounts how Callum, Tom's son, proudly introduced her as his cousin when spectators commented on their striking physical resemblance. The way she savors this moment of biological connection cuts deeply into Allison's heart, making her feel like an outsider in her daughter's life. The casual use of the word cousin represents everything Allison fears, the natural bonds she can never provide. Catherine's lie about Olivia's presence at the match marks a devastating turning point. Not only does she fabricate Olivia's attendance, but she elaborates with detailed falsehoods about their interactions, claiming they got along well enough. Allison, armed with the knowledge that Olivia wasn't there, faces a horrifying realization. Her daughter has become comfortable lying to her face. The transparency that once defined their relationship has been replaced by a web of deception. The strain reverberates through Jeff and Allison's marriage, exposing fault lines in their relationship. Jeff's suggestion of a joint sleepover party for both girls demonstrates his persistent optimism and desire for harmony, traits that suddenly feel naive to Allison. Their heated argument about the party proposal reveals fundamentally different approaches to crisis management. Jeff seeks compromise and integration, while Allison sees these attempts at normalcy as dangerous denial. Their contrasting backgrounds emerge as crucial factors in their divergent responses. Jeff's middle-class upbringing, characterized by stability and predictable outcomes, leads him to approach the situation with measured rationality. He views the family crisis as an interesting challenge to be solved rather than an emotional threat. Meanwhile, Allison's turbulent childhood has left her hyper-vigilant to potential loss. When Jeff praises Catherine's mature handling of the situation, Allison feels doubly betrayed, both by her daughter's apparent preference for her biological family and by her husband's seeming inability to understand her deep-seated fears. The crisis forces them to confront long-buried differences in their emotional makeup. Jeff's appetite for drama and his belief that life should be interesting clashes violently with Allison's need for security and her aversion to emotional upheaval. Their opposing instincts, his to engage, hers to protect, create a widening chasm in their marriage, threatening the foundation of their family just when unity is most crucial. As the families become increasingly entangled, a disturbing pattern of manipulation and hidden agendas emerges. Tom's behavior grows increasingly concerning, particularly in his interactions with Allison. He begins calling with unsettling frequency after Catherine's counseling sessions, often late at night, under the pretense of discussing their daughter's progress. His questions become more personal, probing into Allison's marriage and her feelings about motherhood. Conversations that leave her uncomfortable but uncertain how to maintain boundaries without jeopardizing Catherine's relationship with him. During a community fireworks display, the underlying tensions surface dramatically. Tom and Jeff engage in an awkward display of territorial behavior, competing for Catherine's attention like two seagulls struggling over a chip. Each man attempts to outdo the other, making increasingly elaborate observations about the pyrotechnics and seeking Catherine's validation. The teenager appears both flattered and overwhelmed by their attention, while Olivia watches from the sidelines with growing disgust. The situation escalates dangerously when Tom makes an aggressive advance toward Allison during what should have been a routine visit to his house to pick up Catherine. Backing her against the kitchen counter, he kisses her forcefully, then launches into an unsettling monologue about how they could be a real family since he's Catherine's biological father. His fantasy reveals a deeply disturbed perspective on their situation, one that completely disregards existing family bonds and boundaries. The moment shatters when Olivia walks in, her face contorted with betrayal as she shouts, "You both make me sick," before fleeing the scene. Jeff's betrayal proves equally devastating, though more calculated. While organizing his chronically messy study, Allison discovers a manila file labeled The Swap, working title, buried beneath stacks of papers. The synopsis inside reveals Jeff has been secretly mining their family trauma for his next novel. Despite his attempt to disguise the story by changing the children to boys named Carl and Oliver, the plot mirrors their situation with eerie precision. Most crushing is his appropriation of Allison's closely guarded secret, her decision to give up a baby for adoption at 16, which he's woven into the narrative as character motivation for his fictional mother figure. When confronted with the manuscript, Jeff's response reveals layers of self-justification. He first attempts outright denial, then shifts to claiming he wrote the synopsis months ago as a way to process events. His defense becomes increasingly passionate as he argues that Tom's arrival in their lives blew his mind creatively. Dismissing Allison's hurt over his portrayal of her as highly controlling and his addition of a genetic illness subplot as mere artistic license. The deception extends most painfully to Catherine, whose struggles have been hidden in plain sight. Through her counseling sessions, originally intended to prepare her for genetic testing, it emerges that she's been battling serious mental health issues. Tom later reveals to Allison that Catherine had confided in him about self-harm and severe bullying at school, information she'd chosen to share with him rather than her parents. This revelation hits Allison like a physical blow, forcing her to confront the possibility that despite years of devoted parenting, her daughter felt unable to turn to her in moments of deepest need. The situation reaches a breaking point when Catherine disappears. After spending the night at a friend's house, she leaves early in the morning, claiming she was meeting her parents at a coffee shop. With her phone switched off and no trace of her whereabouts, panic sets in. Jeff and Allison spend hours calling the parents of 70 girls in Catherine's year, but no one has seen her. As time passes without news, they contact the police. Inspector Miriam Davis takes charge, appearing swift and shrewd. Allison explains their complicated situation, the baby swap, the mutated gene, the bullying. Though she suggests Catherine likely ran away, the inspector says they must keep an open mind about other scenarios. Just when the situation couldn't get worse, Annabelle Truby Tom's supposedly dead wife appears very much alive and pregnant. She reveals Tom's elaborate deception. He lied about her death, moved their family to be near Allison's 3 years ago, has been unemployed for years, and kept his children from mentioning their mother was alive. A court order had recently been placed against him, barring him from contacting his children after increasingly erratic behavior. The police classify Catherine's disappearance as high risk when they realize Tom likely has her. Their search reveals neither Catherine nor Tom at his home, only Mozart, his chocolate Labrador, left alone and hungry. As volunteers distribute flyers with their photos side by side, missing, have you seen this girl? Do you recognize this man? Allison hates seeing their faces together, looking so similar yet representing such different intentions. In a desperate attempt to find Catherine, Allison follows a cryptic message from Tom hidden in a copy of Brighton Rock left at their doorstep. Despite knowing she should call the police, she decides this is her only opportunity to find her daughter. Leaving her phone at home to avoid being tracked, she drives to Brighton through pouring rain. In Brighton, Tom orchestrates a chilling scenario that pushes the boundaries of psychological torture. He blindfolds Allison during the entire journey, deliberately disorienting her before bringing her to a remote holiday cottage where Catherine lies drugged and helpless. The scene is horrific. Catherine, having been forcibly given Ropinol, is barely conscious, her body racked with violent episodes of vomiting, her mind plagued by terrifying hallucinations. The cottage itself becomes a twisted stage for Tom's disturbed performance, its ordinary holiday charm transformed into something sinister and suffocating. Tom's behavior demonstrates a frightening disconnect from reality. He maintains an eerily calm demeanor, suggesting family activities like board games and casual conversation as though they're simply enjoying a weekend getaway. This jarring juxtaposition, his forced normalcy against Catherine's visible suffering, creates an atmosphere of profound psychological tension. Catherine, despite her drug state, clings to her mother, her body trembling with fear and chemical after effects. During a brief moment when Tom leaves to prepare food, Allison seizes the opportunity to communicate with Catherine. Speaking in urgent whispers, she reveals two crucial pieces of information. She had deliberately left a trail of clues that might lead investigators to Brighton. And more importantly, Tom's genetic test results were entirely fabricated. Rather than providing comfort, this revelation triggers an intense panic attack in Catherine, her body's response to months of accumulated trauma and psychological manipulation. The situation reaches its climax in the cottage kitchen. Watching her daughter's suffering ignites something primal in Allison, a pure, instinctive maternal rage that transcends rational thought. When she confronts Tom, it's not with careful planning, but with raw, protective fury. Their struggle ends when Allison lands a decisive blow, sending Tom crashing down the basement stairs, a moment that transforms their power dynamic irrevocably. This violent confrontation becomes the ultimate validation of Allison's deepest belief, that motherhood transcends mere biology, manifesting instead as an unshakable bond forged through love, sacrifice, and protective instinct. Acting quickly, she secures their safety by barricading the basement door and breaking a window to scream for help. Catherine's panic attack, though traumatic, proves providential. The commotion draws a neighbor's attention, leading to their eventual rescue. In the aftermath, Allison experiences complex emotions. While seeing Tom's injured body prompts unexpected tears of pity, she remains resolute in the righteousness of her actions. The ordeal crystallizes a fundamental truth about survival. Life presents clear choices between succumbing to fear or rising as warriors against it. Allison emerges from this crucible with renewed determination, choosing to face life's challenges head-on rather than allowing fear to cast shadows over her family's future. This decision becomes not just a personal choice, but a testament to the transformative power of maternal love. By spring, as Catherine and Olivia's joint 16th birthday approaches, a new normal has emerged that none of them could have predicted months earlier. Allison and Annabelle work side by side in the community hall, hanging streamers in lime green and shocking pink, the girls' favorite colors that once seemed as different as the twins themselves. The mothers share knowing glances as they arrange party favors, their former tension replaced by an easy camaraderie born of shared experience and understanding. Allison has discovered layers to Olivia that initial awkwardness had obscured, her wickedly dry humor that catches everyone off guard, her remarkable talent for charcoal sketching, and endearing quirks like her ability to fit 32 Maltesers in her mouth, a feat that both impresses and horrifies the adults. During weekly family dinners, Olivia's laugh has become as familiar as Catherine's, and her artwork now hangs proudly alongside family photos in both homes. Catherine and Olivia have developed their own rhythm, spending afternoons alternating between households while maintaining their distinct identities. They share clothes and secrets, but also respect each other's space and separate friend groups. At Allison's house, they sprawl across the living room floor doing homework. At Annabelle's, they experiment with elaborate cooking projects that sometimes end in disaster, but always in laughter. The crisis that initially threatened to destroy their world has instead expanded it in unexpected ways. Sunday brunches now include both families, with Tom and David bonding over their shared love of cycling, while the girls roll their eyes at dad jokes. Holiday celebrations have doubled in size and joy, with new traditions emerging alongside cherished old ones. Through Allison's journey, the novel explores the deeper meaning of parenthood. She realizes that being a mother isn't about genetic markers or blood types. It's about the thousands of packed lunches, midnight fever watches, and proud moments at school plays. It's about knowing exactly how to cut a sandwich, diagonal, never straight, and which stuffed animal provides the most comfort during thunderstorms. The stranger Allison feared in her home wasn't Catherine. It was the shadow of doubt that biology might override 15 years of bedtime stories, band-aid kisses, and fierce protective love. As their family circle widened to include Annabelle and Olivia, that fear dissolved into the understanding that love multiplies rather than divides. Adele Parks crafts a powerful testament to the true nature of family bonds. In the end, family isn't defined by DNA test results, but by who shows up. Not just for the celebrations, but for the 3 a.m. hospital visits, the heartbreaks, the small victories, and the ordinary Tuesday afternoons. As Allison whispered to Catherine in that basement moment of terror, "I never break my promises." That unwavering commitment, choosing to love and protect every single day, forms the backbone of parenthood, regardless of biological connections.